Everybody, welcome to episode 81 of the Geeksters. Man, we got some room here. We've changed venues. I got the window office. I think all of us got the windows office. No, I'm still waiting on my coffee though, so maybe we'll get that going. I asked for coffee at 8 a.m. this morning. Nothing. But I'm glad to be here. We've got old faces and a new face with us. Well, an old face, but we're glad to have him back. So hey, Fred, how's it going? Welcome back.
Oh, thanks. I was just checking out the new digs here. Can you believe that? Did you guys see the green room? I mean, there was like a fruit basket. We never had any of that at the Geekster Studio.
Wait. No, I'm... Oh, chocolates, beer.
There was beer? I'll be right back.
No. I was there before you. Sorry, man. That was gone.
No, I'm doing good. Yeah, I've been gone a while. Just been a busy summer
nice
with
to hear
work
you.
And,
nice.
You know, child activities and... Just been busy, so. But I'm glad to be here, especially on
I'm glad to have
the inaugural Podnuts show.
Yeah. And to Fred's, I guess it'd be his, I don't know, Fred's kind of crooked. Well, hey, Mitch, how's it going?
It is going pretty good. How is everybody else doing? Well, we know how Fred's doing.
We know how Fred's doing. I'm doing well.
Good.
And Tim Bauermeister is joining us, like always.
Hey, man.
I do want to say live on air, Tim, that last week's show between you and Mitch rocked. I want to say if anybody who's listening to this has not listened to episode 80 with Tim and Mitch, check it out. Great show, great tips. I've already gone and looked at some of the download sites, driver packs, and there was one called Unnamed Devices or something like that that I had looked at.
Unknown Devices.
I had never even heard of those, so I was in the car writing notes.
Yeah.
I may or may not have swerved across the line a couple times, but I got the notes written.
I really appreciate that. You know, we got a lot of kind feedback from that episode,
we
really did. And I never quite, you know, know how to react to that. Not that I don't, you know, believe it.
You're very humble.
I really appreciate that. You know, you felt like it went well, but listening back to it, I guess just kind of—I was there. I don't need to listen to it again. It just sounded very repetitive. But, you know, we get a lot of kind words. Anybody who's a tech, if you've been doing it a while, I definitely suggest you check it out. And if you've been around for a while, there's a lot to be had there. I think that just kind of reinforcing some of the ways that we've always done things, and more importantly, any time in that episode, or really even in the future, carrying on, I can't impress upon our listeners enough, me personally, that as we're going through these things, we have to keep current, and I can't stay current alone. You know, I need these guys, and you know, I need the community. I always have. The community brought me up, and I'm trying to give back, but at the same time, at any point I mention a tool that has become outdated, if there's something out there that's working maybe better, please let us know. Definitely send that along, because it will not fall on deaf ears. And so, especially in that last episode, I kind of went through what I was doing start to finish. Wow, any suggestions that would make my life easier, I am all ears. So thank you. But thanks again, Martin. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all.
Oh, in the chat room, they're telling me to get off the show. That would improve everything.
Oh, a bunch of haters. Haters. They're just jealous. They want your fun to
tap. It doesn't say that. All right, anyway.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
Oh,
I get, you always act
that
surprised.
Was me. I'm
you
sorry.
Always act surprised. But I'm doing great, and I'm so glad to be here in our new digs. You going to address that, or should I go ahead and thank Dor for having us over?
Tim, it's all you, man.
We're not just visiting, right? Are we staying?
No, I think we're here. I think Dor gave us a key. We've reached that point in our relationship
nice.
Where he's given us a key.
So I don't have to, like, it's not like there's a small trial period here that I have to be on my best behavior. I can do as I please.
I didn't say that.
Right. He's a tough character, too, man. He's lit me up on many occasions. No, he hasn't. He's great. No, thanks.
Dor's a great guy.
Thanks for having us, Dor. I got my start here at Podnuts as a listener, a learner, and I took it out in the world. thank you for giving me the opportunity to bring it back.
And I want to say something real quick, too. Yeah, we've been doing this over like a year and a half. And I want to say, and we forgot to talk about it last week, Eric Ardini. When Eric Ardini came on, it really took off. I mean, the show really took off. And then you graciously took over for him, Martin. I mean, it's just been, you know, one good show after another. Bang, 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 bang. And you guys did it. And Tim is a mainstay. You three guys, really. Put us on the map, as far as I'm concerned. Because you're everyday techs. Because, like, I'm not. Fred, you know, Fred does it on the side, too. I mean, you guys are in the field constantly. So, you made the show, as far
as I'm concerned. Yeah, well, okay. But it's the guy it's the guy sitting behind the control panel there that really put this thing together to start to finish. Let me mention, too, that I see it says episode 81 here. This is not 81. We did 81 last week, so.
No, it was
81 last week.
Oh.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was 82. Right.
So, yeah, this is officially 82. But that was 81 episodes of Mitch just killing it. You know, any of us, you know, all the different seasons that the Geeksters had could only bring so much. It's Mitch that sat behind this that really.
Fred, it was Fred. Fred's the one that dreamed up the idea.
We haven't even seen Fred credit. In like 6 months.
No, but.
Get out of here.
It's Fred.
It's
who's
our
Fred.
All kidding aside, it's the producer that really cobbled this thing together. And so what you did there, Mitch, is fantastic. I was always not just, you know, I was on the, but I always enjoyed it very much as a listener. And so don't sell yourself short there, big guy.
And I got a question. When I'm talking, is it bringing up my screen? Because I don't see it on my end.
Yeah.
It is. Okay. It's just, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll second everything Tim said. You know, Dorothy couldn't get back to Oz without the get back to Kansas without the Great and Powerful Oz. And Mitch, you are a Great and Powerful Oz. So thank you for the ruby slippers and the heart.
I don't have a curtain or in the courage hide behind it.
You're still not getting my beer, man.
Fred wants beer. Hey, I'll buy you a beer soon.
And I've said this a million times, and most people agree with me. Fred has a fantastic voice. And I told him that a million times. He don't believe it. Yeah, you got the DJ. You got the perfect voice for doing this stuff. Whenever you can do it.
You just don't have the intelligence to do this stuff.
Yeah, but if I had a voice like that, I could say whatever I wanted. Nobody
do. You've got the details.
I'm not saying you had intelligence. I just say you had a good voice.
You'd be like, you could just read the phone book. People are like, I'm going to listen to this for a while.
Me, I can't remember a thing. I forget everything.
Shaking his
remember
head.
This? What's the name of that? What's the name of this? That,
all right. That. Well, that's we've kicked off this fantastic show, new Podnuts here with all of our shortcomings. So. I don't know. But anyway, hey, Fred, thanks for putting this thing together, man. You guys, everything you did behind the scenes.
Yeah,
yeah I was having some fun with you earlier, but you're very much appreciated.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. It was fun in the beginning, and, you know, it's still fun. So, you know, I unfortunately, I wish I had the opportunity to be here every week, but I don't have the drive because I'm lazy, and I don't have the time because of my work schedule. So it's so good that you've got you guys, like Mitch said, that are here every week and keep it running. And I mean, who would have thought when we started this, 2 years ago, November, it'll be 2 years in November, I believe. In November or December. Yeah. I know it was cold. It was close before to Christmas.
Yeah, remember the Christmas episode? That was one of you.
Oh yeah. I remember that.
Was there a miracle?
No, there was something, but it was no miracle. It's a miracle. Nobody got choked to death.
It's a Geeksters miracle.
But it's amazing. It's amazing that it's still going. So I think that's great. I mean, it's morphed, you know, from on about three or four different occasions. But I think it's actually settled into a good space as it sits now. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Cool. So Fred, welcome back. What have you been up to? Since in the last, 2 months?
Well, you know, like I said, I've been working a lot. And when I have been, at work, it's been very busy. But on the computer side of things, I haven't been really busy. And probably more by design than anything else. But I have had a few things come in. One of them, which was very easy, it's actually a multi-part story, but I'm just going to start with the first part. A person that I know called me and said that her computer had a virus, I think is what she told me. So I said, okay. So I think she also said it wouldn't boot. I don't quite remember that part. But anywho, she brings me to laptop, HP. It's an i3? It's a newer HP. So I get it, and I boot it up, and it takes it a while, but it finally does boot. And in the bottom right corner, you get the error of, not error, but it says, your copy of Windows is not valid. It could be, pirated. And so I called her up, or I messaged her on Facebook. I said, hey, did you just recently reinstall Windows on this? No. I'm like, Well, somebody, because I could tell it was a new install because there was nothing on it. It didn't have any of the HP junkware or anything like that. It was just basic bare bones. Windows 7 Home Premium. So,
so you know it didn't come from the factory because it didn't have all the
right.
HP.
Yeah, retail desk.
So I simply, on a hunch, flipped it over and it had the license for Windows 7 Home Premium. So I typed it in and it activated. So anyway, I went and did, did a basic tune up on it. And I think it did have some kind of a virus. Cleaned that up. Took it back to her and I said, now, are you sure you didn't have Windows reinstalled on this? She goes, well, I took it down to this local, it's a local repair shop. And they said it had a virus on it that they couldn't remove. So, yeah, they did reinstall Windows. I said, well, why didn't they activate it? And she said, well, I called them about that message, but they said they told me just to ignore it, that it eventually would go away. Really?
Yeah. It will eventually, I suppose.
Well, exactly.
So I asked her, I said, well, how much? And meanwhile, amongst my normal things that I do when I'm, doing a tune-up, optimization, whatever you want to call it, I checked the hard drive with Crystal Disk, and it came up as caution. Well, knowing her, I knew that she was, if I told her, hey, this hard drive could go bad, she had nothing on. There was nothing on the hard drive. I knew she wouldn't want to replace it, so I just said, well, just go with it as it is. It'll probably last a while. Well,
it'll eventually go away.
So she, I asked her, I said, well, what'd they charge you, for that? And she, $150 to reinstall Windows. There was drivers missing on a bad hard drive and they didn't activate it. So I just, I have to say, I was kind of blown away. I mean, by the lack of attention.
Who did the work, Fred?
It's a local
place.
Yeah, well, it's not a computer repair shop. They're kind of a all in one. I think their mainstay is actually business phone systems, where it's like an answering service. Their software routes calls to people who answer your phones for you, but they also do web hosting and they do, web design and they do all this stuff. But one of the things they do is computer repair, and they have a guy come in like, 3 days a week on a part-time basis that does the repairs. So it's not like it's a, typical mom and pop repair shop where you would expect them to do a good job. It's more of a part-time, kid from probably on like leave from high school for an hour comes over and does it. But that's pretty disappointing when people put out. It's one thing if you miss something or you don't know, but when it's an obvious, and this lady doesn't have a lot of money, and so now here I am picking up the pieces for.
See, doesn't it take you off? It makes me feel like going down to the shop. Why did you do this? Saying this to the.
Well, I don't like to second guess people.
I would ask first, but I just.
Fred, you weren't second guessing them. They missed major steps. It's not like you went down there and said, guys, I wouldn't have installed, Malwarebytes. I would have installed super anti spyware. You weren't second guessing them. They missed crucial steps.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, how can you install Windows on a system and not activate it? I mean, isn't that like, when I do a Windows install, before I do anything else, that's my goal. Number one. After you get on the internet, is get Windows to activate. So, anyway, there is a part two to that story, but we'll move on and let somebody else speak. That's one of the things I've been doing.
Wow. And then Mitch, you had some computer issues. You'd kind of been voxing back and forth with some hard drive issues that you had.
I had built an Enforce N2 machine AMD years ago, probably 7-8 years ago. And my sister's had it since for the last 3 years, I guess, maybe longer. A couple hard drives went up in it. But actually, a lot of those boards were those ones that they suffered from the bad capacitors, leaking capacitors. But that one didn't. But I had other ones. But this was an MSI board. Anyway, she calls me up. I was going over there anyway, but she said it wouldn't boot up. It would just boot up to the BIOS, and you get this message. Actually, I got up here. The message was, fast track controller cannot be detected, no BIOS installed. You know, it would just loop back to that. And so I'm figuring it's a hard drive, but I brought my ton of my boot CDs, and it wouldn't boot up. The only one I booted up was C Tools, but none of the other ones were booting up, and that's on, you know, it's an old IDE, and it's on a separate IDE channel, and I couldn't figure it out. Of course, I took it home, but as soon as I unhooked that bad hard drive, lo and behold, all my boot CDs worked again. Matter of fact, I got a bunch of hard drives here. I put a 20 gig hard drive, installed Puppy Linux to it. It's working great, and I've since installed that bad drive. It's an 80 gig drive and a USB external enclosure hooked up with one of my computers. It doesn't see anything on there. I mean, it says it needs to be formatted. And then I'm using Recova, and I don't know if it was Recova, you know, that program Recova or whatever it's called.
Yeah,
Recuva. I'm sorry.
It's called Recuva.
And it said like, yeah,
from Pureform,
it said
right?
That I think it said corrupted data, and I didn't try to reformat yet because I was going to try to throw like a couple different live Linux CDs in there and see if it would see it. There's just some pictures you would like to get off of there. But that's funny. I mean, can you have a bad hard drive that would affect another IDE device on the same computer?
If it's booting to the wrong
there's
hard
no,
drive.
There's only one hard drive. There's no, that would be, that's just the one hard drive that was in there. The one hard drive and the burner, CD burner. That was it. No other devices in there.
So you were just trying to boot from that
one. I mean, the hard drive, it wouldn't boot to the hard drive. And I would put my live CDs in to boot to that. And they wouldn't boot.
Right. Yeah, it sounded like the master, something's wrong. Definitely. And were you able to slave it to another machine?
The bad hard drive? No, I was saying I put it in USB closure and try to read it from one of my other computers. Oh, it's definitely bad. But C Tools, but I thought that's the only thing that did run in it, and I thought it passed. I did the short test. But I wanted to try a couple other Linux CDs, see if anything sees it. But the Windows didn't see it, and I don't think I tried in Puppy Linux. But it's just actually it's acting like Tim remembers. Remember the problem that Johnny was having with her SD card and her phone? I guess it was reacting that way. Yeah, so
it sounds like a boot record issue. I mean, that's the first one of the things that I think of. It's that something's.
I could try to run spin it, spin right, and see what happens or something. But what got me is why was it affecting any of my boot CDs? Unless it was just wasn't reading them, because I put about 3 or 4 different ones in there. But the same ones worked fine when I took the hard drive out. They booted up. Yeah.
How far through the BIOS?
That message. That was it. It wouldn't get. That was all. And you know,
but as like for example, as it was going through the normal BIOS kind of messages and whatnot, was it halfway or was it?
I think it was actually the beginning.
Yeah. So and see that what's happening there is that there's something.
Something was hosing. It was hosing something.
with that drive, I would imagine it's probably. You know, maybe not a hardware issue so much as you would imagine with a hard drive with failing sectors and whatnot, but, you know, probably something that was actually being to fail in the circuitry of the board, if I had to guess. And I had a similar situation last week where I had a drive that was going bad, and let's see, I wanted to, like, I was able to slave it to one machine here to run Spinrite, and, or actually to, you know, to run the recovery tools, to rescue data and this sort of thing. And once I was satisfied that I got everything I was going to get, I couldn't actually clone the drive, which was my intention. So pulled data, as much data as I could, ran Spinrite for as long as I felt was going to be any value. And it was still kind of okay on that. If I stuck it in the USB as an external on a machine, Windows, same message I think you were getting was that it was, you know, it was the very general kind of thing where it wanted formatted and whatnot. And so then I attached it to my actual bench machine you know, after shutting it down, attached it and rebooted, and, you know, bam, it was like, what am I going to do with this? I mean, it barely got anywhere in the BIOS, and I didn't even get a nice message like that. You know, it just, it looked
so
like.
So you got to the point you couldn't see it either.
It wouldn't even boot.
Very,
I mean, it would not really even fully begin even the process of going through the BIOS and the whole startup procedure. You know, took the drive loose and it was okay. So yeah, that's interesting. We had kind of the same thing going there. So yeah,
I've never had. I don't think I ever had anything quite like that.
No, me neither. That's why.
Very strange. I mean, I'm
when you get something electronic. You get something electronic that goes wonky like that, it can affect all kinds of things.
It could be actually electronics, yeah. and then the platters could still be fine.
Yeah, like certainly. The controller is going
see, if
bad
I could find the exact
like
same drive, I could maybe flip it out. You know what I mean? Maybe.
Sure, change
right.
the board.
And I might have a couple.
Oh, you're getting your geek on that there.
It's just, you know, I've never had it where, why is one, you know, IDE device on a separate channel, like IDE1, stopping anything from IDE2 from working, you know, but I got Puppy Linux. I installed it to the hard drive. And Puppy Linux is not, you have to, I don't know if you've messed with Puppy Linux, Martin. A lot of people just use a live CD. I wanted to install it on the hard drive, and you have to prepare that hard drive. It doesn't do it for you automatically. When unlike Ubuntu and then the Bootno Grub and everything, you have to do all that stuff manually. I mean, I just followed a guide on YouTube, but it's working fine. Yeah, it's working fine.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the distributions you have to, you know, like you were saying, Ubuntu, it partitions out your home folder, your swap file, and all that kind of stuff. Right, where then, you know, you have things like...
I had to manually do it, make an install, you know, partition, and had to make that boot, then you have to make a swap file, then you have to make it active, and, you know, it's all pretty easy if you do it all the time, I guess. But now I don't know nothing about, like, you know, you got what's Ubuntu has Synaptic Package Manager. I don't know what this has. I mean, I think you might have to do stuff manually. I'm not even sure.
Well, you know, I believe Puppy is based off of Debian. I'd have to look. So you can install Synaptic Package Manager inside of Puppy if you wanted to. It, just because it doesn't come by default doesn't mean that it's not. Doesn't mean that it's not available. You just have to manually install it. A lot of the spin-off distros, just like Ubuntu, have their own package manager that they do. You know, the Ubuntu Software Center or the, you know, Mint has their own. Cinnamon has their own package manager. You can still, if you like to use Synaptic and you're comfortable with that, you can install Synaptic and just run that instead.
And most people do. Has Yum or Red Hat or Fedora or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's their installer file. Cool. And Tim, what, anything you've had? I haven't seen you guys in like 2 weeks, so.
Pretty much more of the same. I'm kind of at a loss. Nothing really exciting, just more of the, had another FBI virus cleaned up, took that back yesterday. It's been a lot of, my email doesn't work, my printers don't work, so, I usually fire through my email, kind of look, you know, through the last week, you know, hit the high spots, and ironically enough, my email's not working. So I should call somebody. The provider is actually undergoing some maintenance. So
during the middle of the day maintenance. That's awfully nice.
Well, and I even gave them a heads up that, you know, we're doing the show at this time and that doesn't work for me and they really should reschedule. And so, you know, they might have just lost my
$100
a month. No. You know who I am. I love that. Do you know
I am
who
Tim Baumeister.
Somebody help this man. He doesn't know who he is. So, yeah, it was really just kind of the normal kind of stuff going on. That's exciting. Probably the best call I got yesterday was a text that a machine that I had just returned a couple days ago was not working. Okay, so I said, well, I text back. I said, well, I can call you in 20 minutes. Well, that's fine. I'll tell you what, that's what I'm going to bring. That's good advice. If you get a message from somebody saying, this isn't doing this, or it's not doing that, or something bad, you know what? Unless you absolutely you feel some responsibility to yourself or the customer to answer it right away, sometimes there's something to be said for letting it sit for about 10 or 15 minutes to simmer. Because a lot of times they'll figure it out. And I'm not saying to be dismissive or to put people off, but there are a lot of people who will jump the gun and their knee jerk is, you know, the cat just sneezed on the screen. I'm calling Tim. And it's like, no, you know what? If I let him go 10 or 15 minutes, they'll figure out how to get the cat sneeze off the screen. And this was really one of these. There was a stuck key, which, you know, how many times have I seen that where it's like it won't boot? Like, it won't boot. It's just beeping and beeping. And you find a stuck key, which is always
the last thing you would look at.
Always a nice little discovery. It's an easy fix. Yeah, it's an easy fix. And so apparently that's about 5 minutes later, he texted me back. That's all it was. So it was just by chance I was involved with something, so I could not call him back. But, yeah, you know what? I don't put people off. And if they call me, I answer the phone. But sometimes there's calls I've missed, and I felt that it was a fortunate thing because I could have spent a half hour trying to troubleshoot this thing without ever saying, hey, why don't you just run your hand over the keyboard or something? You know, it was something that I would not think of, not looking at it, something they, you know, it, somehow, you know, really, really under the gun, they managed to discover the problem. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a call like that yesterday, actually. Got a call. Outlook kept popping up and asking for the password. And the guy's like, he left me a voice message saying, I've tried every password I can think of. I just don't have the password. Well, I've got the password list for, it's a property company. And I was able to finally get a hold of him. I was right in the middle of a big project. Was able to get a hold of him about an hour later. And he said, yeah, I shut down Outlook, brought it back up. It logged right in. Everything's fine. So it's just a matter of him just closing out Outlook, letting it sit, Outlook coming back up, and everything was fine. He's like, so that seems to work. And he was, you know, he wasn't down very long. I had this, you know, sinking feeling that he was going to be down for a very long time and was starting to feel really bad because I hadn't got a chance to get back to him. And he's like, no, all's good. So yeah, there are some, and I think when we get the calls, maybe this call was a little different, but if you definitely get a, hey, cat sneezed on my monitor, you know, type call, you know, I think as techs, we learn what calls are really, okay, that can wait a little bit, other than, you know, as opposed to, hey, I really have to take this call, you know.
You have to be able to prioritize, because if you're ever going to get as busy as you actually want to be, you know, at some point you're going to have more requests at a moment than you can handle. So, you know, with the phone calls and the texts and the emails and this and that, you do have to be able to parse it quickly, prioritize and respond accordingly. And so some things, you know, sometimes I know I'm busy and I'll say, hey, you know, I'm glad you called. This is great speaking to you. I probably can't get back to you for about an hour and a half. Maybe this afternoon. Is that okay? Yeah, I mean, after you feel them out, obviously you already have a good sense that, you know, these are people you know, you've worked with before, you have a good sense of the problem and what their time frame is. And here they say, yes, that's perfect, or no, this is an issue, I need it sooner. And so you can just kind of go from there. But that's the thing. This is going to happen. It's a real skill. It's something that I don't feel like I'm very good at a lot of times. I feel like it's something I'm continually working towards being better at communication and just prioritizing things. Because, you know, if I worked at the pizza place, you know, there's the guy that he's like answering phones and there's people standing there and he's taking money and he's putting the pizzas out. And like, I can't stand that environment for any more than about 10 minutes because I start getting like anxious. I mean, like after about 4 hours of that, I think that I would be like throwing pizzas out the door and I'd be like throwing phones. It's just too much at one time. You know, I kind of like the conveyor belt where things come one at a time and you put it where it goes. And so, you know, that's one thing I know about myself, that's an area that needs work. And, you know, I keep working toward that. But no, that environment where you just have like things constantly coming at you, that's like, it makes me, I guess I'm not built that way.
It's like the family and I have been kind of just watching some old TV. It's like the I Love Lucy with the chocolates. Yes. Where when it's smooth, everything's fine. But as soon as it starts just picking up a little bit, there's that moment of, okay, now I'm buried and I'm stressing out. So yeah, I'm right there with you, Tim. It's something that I'm working on myself.
Yeah.
So.
And that, you know, it's just, it starts coming faster and faster. And I think where I go wrong is that I just figure if I ignore it, it'll kind of like calm back down, you know, but then you get that point where you're about to get buried in it. And then it's too late to become overwhelmed. And,
yeah.
So you really have to start digging out of it. Yeah. But yeah, if the cat sneezed on the screen, that can wait. I agree with you. That's good advice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the issues that I, you know, to speaking of being really busy, was that last week I didn't make it because I was just slammed. So Monday I had a server deployment, a huge domain deployment Monday and Tuesday. Everything went really smooth. But then as we started to get ready to prepare for the show, I just was not able to unbury myself and was called to another site where they had some printing issues. And while printing issues are pretty common and everybody, we kind of go, this is an interesting thing. If you guys have ever played with or seen any of the Brother multifunction copiers, and it's the home and small office ones like the 89 or 8890 DW. They're tiny. They're not very big, but they have a fax copier scanner in them. Networkable, both wireless and hardwired. What happens is if you change routers. So this client, they were on a, you know, 192.168.1 router, and all they did was move to a new router, 192.168.1 router. That's all they did. Moved. They didn't do anything fancy, didn't change IP addresses, they just moved. This printer, and I don't know if it's this printer or other Brother printers, will just stop printing. You can't find them anymore. The printers go gray in the local machines, and they just stop printing. So Brother has a tool that you have to run on each computer, and it actually kind of, it fixes itself. It goes out, finds the computer again, makes the connections again. It's the weirdest thing. And it's one of those problems that you'll end up realizing, well, what'll happen is the first time I did it, I actually had to uninstall the printer and then reinstall the printer. And of course, on those multifunction printers, it's such a big, you know, package of installers, because you have the scan to the, you know, you can scan from the printer to the computer. You can initiate the scanning from the computer to the printer. You know, you can email the fax, or you print to fax type stuff. So it's that big, bulky, you know, 400, 500 meg package installer that takes so long to install. There's a tool out there. It's called their Net tool. It's their Brother Net tool. You just run it on the machine. It goes out, it scans the network, because you can't, you know, you're on the network, you have assigned an IP address, or the printer's picking up an IP address. You run the tool, it's a small executable, it scans the network, it finds the printer, you say yes, this is the printer. Then it just prompts you for, are you the only one printing this, or is anybody else? And I usually just say, you know, other people are printing to this, that's the default. And then it just fixes itself. All the icons come back. That connection is made. All the printing functions come back. All the scanning functions come back. It's like it never moved. It just, the movement of this to, from, like I said, not even from a different subnet, just the actual moving from one router to another router freaks it out. So if you ever run into a brother printer that just doesn't print, and it was printing, and all they did was change, like, you know, the router died. And that's what happened here, is they went from one router to another.
What kind of brother printer quits. Was it? Do you remember?
This was a Brother 8890 Diaz and Dog W. So it was kind of a, like I said, it was a small, like, Soho multifunction copier.
I had issues with mine, and it just wouldn't retain anything. It was wireless, and that went out first, and I started using Ethernet, and that was fine as long as I didn't lose power. I replaced it with another Brother. It was so cheap, though. It was so cheap. If I get 3 years out of it, it was only like $80. You know, it's worth it. You know?
Right. But they have me, and these are property management companies. So this is a great example. It's not even if it changes routers. If the actual thing moves, because I remember this. So they're in, apartment complexes are being built. They're in a trailer. Just a, you know, like a construction trailer. That's where the office is, and they're doing other leasing out of that. They moved from the leasing office into, so the trailer had to go away, so they just moved into an apartment complex. Same.
The trailer. The trailer.
I know, they moved. So from the trailer into an office,
Art
they upgraded.
Only works with the best.
The.
Well, no, that. He made me laugh about that a few weeks ago, that trailer. So it's.
I'm getting ready to move in. What are you guys talking about?
No,
trailer was
that's right. This was the same company, actually. So they moved from the trailer into apartment, and it broke. It stopped printing. Same router, same everything. They moved actually routers, but on another place, all they did was actually pick up all the gear and they moved it to a new place and they just hooked everything back up. It stopped printing. You had to run this tool again for the Brother to actually connect because they were just down. Printers not working. It's a weird thing. So it's the Brother Net tool is what you're looking for. And that'll fix it. You just run it. You have to run it on each machine, but it will reconnect and fix the printing issues. Yeah. Weirdest thing, but I've never seen that on any other printers. I mean, you would think that if you move a network printer, just all you're doing is shutting gear down, moving it, plugging it back in, turning it back on, it would keep everything.
What's getting a new address? Is that what's happening?
Nothing. It keeps it's keeping the IP address the same. Everything is staying exactly the same. Nothing is changing except for the fact that it just loses its communication. And you have to run this tool to reinitiate.
So the printer does have a static IP address.
It must be getting lost when that router somehow. I mean, what else would explain it?
I don't know. Something with Brother. And I've only seen it on Brother computers. So if you run into that issue,
it looks like a nice printer. Yeah,
that's a fix for that. It is a nice printer. It's fast. It works really good for a small, two or three, Soho type thing. But
Martin, I did something too over the weekend. Over my sister's, she just had DSL modem, and I put a router in there because there was two computers now because. Older sister, but anyway, so you know how people said, if you got DSL, you got to put in bridge mode, blah 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 blah. And of course, I didn't want to do that because I don't want to talk to Verizon for an hour to get the password and all that stuff. So, and I just got a D-Link, it was a cheap D-Link, but it had like 192.68.01 and for the new router, and the modem was the usual 192.168.1.1. So, and everything worked fine. It worked. I just changed the password in there.
Because it sounds like what will happen is you probably off that DSL, their DSL router was one connection out, like one connection into it. So what happened is it has a DHCP scope in it. It assigned the WAN interface on the your D-Link one of its IP addresses, and then everything from the D-Link got the D-Link DHCP.
Yeah, see, everybody tells me, you're going to get conflicts.
No, you don't. You would get conflicts if they have the same IP address, you would get conflicts. And running from bridge mode, what that would do is you would be passing the traffic, you would be passing the dynamic IP address from Comcast or Verizon, the ISP to the router. That was one of the issues that I ran in with my network install last week is they had a static Comcast IP address, and I put a WatchGuard firewall in, and we tried to make rules off the firewall, and then it wasn't working. So we realized that the IP address, Comcast was giving out a 10-dot IP address. So I now if I need to make rules at this company, I have to go into the WatchGuard, make rules, and then turn around and go into the Comcast firewall router and make rules there. And I called Comcast and I said, is there any way just to do a full-on pass all the traffic through? And they said, nope.
That's so, what one of the three classes of an IP address is like 10 is usually used right. for businesses. Like where I'm at, everything's a 10 where I'm at.
Right, yeah, you got... because they're non-routable. You can have a 10, I can have a 10, and then we can, you know, they're not going to clash or anything. We talked about that a couple weeks ago on the Nat and Pat episode.
Must be sweet to work somewhere where everybody's...
Something's not going to be right. You're going to see one. I use a 10. You know, unless somebody knows what they're doing, you know.
The reason is because the default, because a 10-dot IP address is a /8. So you have hundreds of thousands of IP addresses. So that's 255.0.0.0. Whereas the 192.168.1. The IP address is called a /24, and that is the subnet 255.255.255.0. It's a limiting of how many IP addresses you can get. So usually in a business, they'll use 10 because they need more than X amount of IP addresses. That allows them to have, right. I don't have the numbers in front of me, and I don't remember them off the top of my head, but you know that allows you for a lot of IP addresses. Now, I run it at home, but I run it with a shorter IP address, you know, subnet. It's just preference. Yeah. So you can run a 10, you know, you can run a 10 in your home, but generally speaking, you're going to, you know, 90% of the home routers you get are going to be, you know, probably 99% right, are going to be the 192.168. And we've seen them depending if they're, you know, .2, .1 or, you know, .0 or .1, because they're only limiting you down to a small range of IP addresses, available IP addresses. So Fred, did you have more? Do you have something? You had some? Did you have some hard drives go bad as well?
I had that one, and then the second part two of that story was returned that laptop, that HP. About a week goes by, I get a message from her. I'm sorry to bother you, but this computer won't turn on. that's descriptive. So I said, okay, well,
plug it in.
I said, is it turned off?
You know, I don't even ask those questions anymore. I just say drop it off. I get it, and it wouldn't do anything. You know, I think it would get to the BIOS screen, splash screen, but I think that was all it would do. Anyway, I don't remember exactly what I did for as far as troubleshooting it, but effectively the hard drive had gone kaput. And it had gone kaput to the extent that I can't even read the data off of it. I put it in my toaster, and I can't find anything. I mean, it won't even recognize it. And so I thought, because my toaster's been giving me a little bit of issue lately, so I thought, well, I'll just plug it into my machine here, you know, my desktop, and I know I can read it that way. Same thing. Same exact thing. So I thought that, oh, it's kind of weird, but is what it is. I tried to do a get data back on it, and it wouldn't recognize it in the toaster or in the desktop. So fortunately, it was, like I said, it was a laptop. I had a brand new Western Digital 500 gig drive in the box that I bought for somebody else that didn't end up using. So I was able to install that and then, you know, reinstall Windows again for her. And of course, I put the license key in there. I did.
Did you activate it?
Windows Man. Twins activated.
Okay, just checking.
Don't do any of that stuff. There's a guy down the road that'll fix it for
you. Yeah. Fred took Fred's friend took hers down here. Same guy, right?
So,
you know, the
what? Wait,
so the one that lost. Fred was talking about, the lady. Yeah, it's the same place.
Yeah, I fixed it first. I took the money and ran. Hey, look, I get twice the money for half the job. What, you get stupid?
There you go. That's business.
Yeah, that's business. Good business skills. Anything ends with, what are you, stupid? That's business. Turns out I am stupid. I'm a great tech. I'm mediocre.
But I did end up using that, what was it, driverpacks.net? I did using that from you guys' recommendation. Yeah, so that's a great tool. Love it. I'm going to keep that one on the most used list. Yeah, that was. Go ahead.
Yeah, there was a lot of recommendations last week that if you're just doing one here and one there, I don't know that it necessarily makes sense. But once you are doing any repetition in this, you know, that's where it really makes a lot of sense. You make the investment in the small amount of time it takes to download the tools, you know, burn the disks or create, you know, just, or not even the disks, but, you know, just to get them to your flash drives. You know, the amount of time it takes to create your tools, yeah, it's going to take some time. But if you're going to start doing more than one here and one there.
Anytime you having your tools organized, and I don't do it, don't believe me, but our friend Brian there, Brytech09 on YouTube, he's constantly preaching, have all your tools up to date and working correctly, and, you know, when you're not busy, that's when you use that time to go and update your tools and get tools that you don't have, and, you know, make sure you have copies of everything you need, and because it just makes things go so much quicker. You know, like I use, I've been using Katerin a lot. And boy, that's just a time saver, you know. I love it. And even with D7, I've been Nick Shaw's product there. I've been using it. I've been trying to work it into my workflow, although there's a lot to it, so it's kind of a learning curve. Although he is putting out videos on the usage of it. So, and he's a sponsor at PodNuts, by the way.
He is.
So,
yeah.
Yes.
And you met him in person. You got to shake his hand.
What are you talking about?
Oh.
Wow.
That was a lot of belly.
Oh.
Moving on.
It was great. Yeah, I did get to meet him for about a half hour.
What am I, chop liver?
Oh, I got to meet you, too. I tried to meet Martin, yeah. But, you know, he can't be bothered, and Bauermeister, I drive 5 minutes from his house every week. But
yeah,
can't be bothered.
Boy, don't even get me started. You always tell me you're driving by 5 minutes after you passed. Hey, I just passed.
Well, that's
good,
Kevin.
Yeah, that's what he said to me too. Hey, Martin, I'm flying over right now. That was a half an hour ago.
Were you gonna come out with a mirror?
Yeah. I know. I'll light a flare.
You know what's funny is I was going into a schedule into Akron last week, Akron, Ohio. So I an airport, which 5 minutes from Kevin's house, the former host of the show here, and in violating my own rule, you never call people the day before and tell them you're coming because it'll change. But I violated the golden rule and I told him I'll be there tomorrow at 4:00, and sure enough, overnight trip changed. I had to scramble to get a hold of him to let him know because he said he was going to be there at 4:00, and I didn't want him to, you know, go running up to some airplane and get, you know, guns drawn at him because they're like, who's this crazy man running at the airplane?
Yeah. Just be standing there with a sign that says
climbing in the back of his car. Take me to the hotel, please.
For about an hour. Well, I'll be in Columbus.
Are you going
up
to,
here?
So oh,
you're
going? So
you guys want to meet me, Ohio Linux Fest.
Oh, cool.
I'm going, yeah. Super Coop and I are flying out.
I'll be there. I'll be there
still
Saturday.
Still a slight chance that I might be there. A slight chance.
That's not very much.
We're working on it.
Well, if we're getting into Baltimore quite late, so we'll come and put a mask over you. Hog tie you and throw you in the van.
Say quite we'll late. What do you mean? Thursday afternoon or?
Yeah, it'll be right around 4:30 or so.
No, I mean, coming from A lot of traffic from BWI to here in the 4:30 that time of the day.
No, I don't think we're driving up Baltimore door? Until yeah, about 4:15 okay. or so. Yeah. Yep, we're gonna fly over and then drive with door, and then we'll fly out of Columbus back home.
Should have you pick me up. You go right by me.
Well, there you go. Hop on. Stand out there with a sign. Oh, and we'll call you and be like, "Yeah, we just passed you about 5 minutes ago."
Yeah, that would be kind of like a...
hey, Fred, we're flying by.
So I had one other thing interesting happen, and I so my daughter's dance studio, and the lady who owns it, she has a, I don't know how old it is. It's like a closed circuit TV system where she has two cameras set up in different studios so that like parents can watch on a little TV screen when they're the kids are in the studio. But it's like literally a little 10-inch black and white TV. The thing's probably at least 15 years old, if not more. And she wanted to up. She's got a new 36-inch TV, and I had suggested to her that maybe we should put the video up on that, you know, make it color and make it look nicer and maybe add audio. And so she had asked me about that yesterday. And I said, well, I was sitting there looking at it, thinking of a solution, a cheap solution. And I thought, well, why not just turn that computer or that screen into a new, to a second monitor off of her desktop, which is sitting right there. Then just plug a couple webcams in and then she could just display them on that second monitor, which is the TV.
Sure.
And so doing a little talking with some people, one of the screens or cameras would have only been about 5 feet, 6 feet from the computer, which would have worked out fine. But the other one's like 50 feet, like, which is just too far to run a webcam, you know, USB cable. So started talking with some guys on here, and I got talking with Mitch's son, David, network engineer, and about IP cams. And I really wasn't, you know, not an expert at all. Didn't even know anything about them. But ended up after talking for a few hours and looking at what he has set up, I ordered some, she ordered them yesterday. They'll be in tomorrow. Some Foscam IP cams. And, yeah, they're real nice. I believe they're like 720p. David has the 1080p HDs, and he set up an account so we could remote in and see his picture. Oh, my gosh. It was unbelievable how clear the picture was on that thing. And you can remotely, it's got remote pan and zoom, and it's got audio in and out, which is really kind of cool. And, they're wireless or wired. I'm going to shoot for the wireless. It may end up being, I don't know, the one that's going to be about 50 feet away. I don't know. Just going to wait and see if it's going to work that far or not. But I think it's pretty cool. I'm excited to learn something new, getting them all set up. And my understanding is the configuration's not all that difficult. I know that with I've got a home DVR, what do you call it, system, you know, but it's a, Night Owl, one of the boxed, you know, versions. It's got its own little DVR computer. And, but to set it up, you know, for viewing it externally out, you know, outside of the through a web interface, you know, you got to do port forwarding and open some ports up and that kind of stuff, which I had working, but it's no longer working. So I'm going to have to figure out that, but, I'm assuming it'll be the same thing with these IP cams in terms of remote access, but you just have to wait and see. But
so I'm just looking at their website. I don't have any IP cams set up, and I've been looking at maybe doing something like that for clients just to note. And this looks like it does run over a web page. Is that a web page that's hosted internally? Is there something you need to install machine?
This Foscam, I believe, comes with its own software that will be like a, you know, you could, like a DVR system. You know, it's installed locally, correct?
So, and that's installed locally.
But you can also, you know, access them through like a web interface, like an IP address.
Right. Okay, so then you just port, like you said, you just port forward. To her, but I believe,
because I was watching some YouTube comparisons and videos on these flash cams, and this guy was doing one on an iPad, and it looked to me as though it was like an iPad app for the Foscam cameras. So I'm sure you have to go in there and put the IP in for that camera and, you know, in the port. And, you know, because I know, like, with my DVR, it's the same way. Yeah. You can get an app for it. Mine's a Night Owl. It's just a Walmart. But you can do the same thing, but you got to put in the IP and the port and all that. So, it's pretty cool. I'm excited to learn, you know, like you said, learn something new. And these cameras aren't that much. They're as much as a webcam. They're no more than a webcam, you know. She got three of them for on Amazon for $190.
Really, that is cool. I'm gonna have to pick up something like this. Do you remember which one?
Give me a minute while somebody else is talking. I'll look. But
yeah,
The price range. Well, you know, of course, these aren't the, you know, Las Vegas casino, you know, quality, but they're good enough. And excuse me, the one David has is an HD, like I said, and those were about $140 a piece, $150 a piece. And the ones that weren't HD were, but the ones that had PoE, power over Ethernet, they were, I want to say $89.99 a piece. But I don't need that. I don't need PoE because everywhere she's putting a camera, there's power available, you know. So there's no
Yeah. Well, and then, when you move to PoE, then you have to make sure you have to incorporate a power of Ethernet switch in that. And a lot of times those are a little
more expensive. Well, actually, I was looking at it. You can really either have a switch or you can have a injector, PoE injector. And those injectors are, they're not that much.
That's
I think they're
true.
About $25 a piece. It's still going to be quite a bit more, but
yeah, well,
the PoE Foscams that I was looking at, doesn't matter. They're about $89 a piece, but anyway, I kind of lost my train of thought. But yeah, you can have that switch, which I believe is what David has, a PoE switch.
Right. And I just looked up on the Foss website. I mean, you probably can get them cheaper if you search around. But on the Foss website, an 8-port PoE switch where 4 ports are PoE and the other 4 are not.
Wow. That'd be the way to go.
Or
if
really,
you're
going
to do 4 cameras,
you know, that's not
that'd
bad.
Be better than an injector because then you got to buy 4 injectors. You might as well just buy the switch. So,
right. Oh. Yeah, and then you're already getting. Then you have the switch available for Then you have 4 more ports available for other stuff. Now, if you're not using power of Ethernet, you know, you can use it as just as a dummy switch if you don't need to. Now you have to check probably some manuals and stuff to make sure you're not sending electricity right. over something
well,
that doesn't need
the,
it. But
you know, the other thing is, you know, everybody says,
"Hey, that one's powered."
You can't record. First off, I'm sure there's got to be software available that you could record locally, just like a DVR onto the computer. I would imagine, but we don't need to.
It's probably Linux-based.
Spend the next 4 years trying to figure out how to make it work. teach you how to say Apple. But we don't need to record. So it's not a security system. It's not a, you know, surveillance in so much as it is just a convenience, you know, for parents to watch, you know, little Sally dance around her tutu. So that's what I'll be working on tomorrow. And hopefully figure out next time I'm on 2 years from now when we move to Twit, I'll report back.
That's right. That's exciting because that's exciting because my brother and sister have been looking at something like that. They have some kids and they've got a fairly big house and their playroom is upstairs. And so when they're downstairs and the kids are playing upstairs, if something happens, they have to run downstairs or whatever. They want to be able to watch. You know, they want to be able to see what's going on.
Yeah,
this
I mean,
would be a
I,
great
honestly,
idea.
I'm kind of disappointed that I hadn't really messed with them sooner because you can get them even cheaper than that. I mean, you can find them. David was saying at Micro Center, he sees them sometimes for like $25. You know, not necessarily the greatest quality, but you know, something that would work. For example, if you just wanted, have it in your house, it's just, you know, something you could, like when you're on vacation, which is what I do. Yeah, you know, I'll just remote in and, you know, through TeamViewer and fire the webcam up, take a look around. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had a coworker one time that I think he was using the X10 ones, and I was out over the summer helping him out, and he had his home system up on his computer. And we were talking, and he's like, "Oh, I got to go." I'm like, "Where are you going?" He points to his computer and says, "UPS man's there. I got to go pick up my, the, you know, whatever he's delivering." And he took off. because he saw UPS come up, ring the doorbell, and just drop the package on his doorstep. I mean, he just lived 5 minutes away, so he was back in no time. But it was like, okay. And that's what he does. He just makes sure, you know, he watches for whenever stuff comes into his house. And I guess one time his daughter or some family member said, no, we weren't home. And he's like, liar, I watched you.
You're never safe. You're always being watched in today's world.
So I know. And now
that's right.
He doesn't
I'm
have to do it.
I'm actually thinking
the NSA
about canceling
just does it
my backup, you know, because I just figured if I ever lose anything, I'll just get a hold of the NSA and say, hey, can I get that backup you guys made the other day? Oh.
What was my password again for my email account?
Which,
I can't remember it.
Story.
If you could just give it to me, that'd be great.
Salt Lake City, and the hotel we stay at is near the airport, just on the west side of the airport. It's a Hilton. And the girl who was driving us in the van, crew shuttle, she missed the exit to get off for the hotel, so she had to go the next exit up. Well, as we turn around, we're coming back down this little side road. There's this building. It says, you know, FBI. And it's huge. And it just clicked. I'm like, that's that new data center that the FBI built in Salt Lake City. So, of course, I was snapping pictures with as we went by, you know. And this place is massive.
Yeah. Fred, it was nice knowing you. It's glad to see you here. We're going to see you in about 20 to 35.
Great. Like he said, of course I was.
Of course.
Naturally,
you know,
like anyone.
And of course,
would.
And it's funny. You know, so I was talking about that building. It was kind of funny. I was listening to one of the shows on Twit, and there was a guy who lived literally like right there in that neighborhood. And he made the comment that the people who live there, a lot of the people actually think that they're more susceptible to having their data intercepted from the FBI because of proximity to the building. So I just thought that was funny because he said, well, yeah, because the pumps that are required are much smaller. You don't need the big data pumps. You just need a real small one.
Right. So, it's just data can get there that much faster.
Right. Well, it's like having more water pressure when you're right next
to it. Did you hear
that
they're collecting, 2.6% of all internet traffic? I thought that number is just astounding. Anyway.
Yeah.
And 90% of that 2.6 is Facebook.
But the good news is. Yeah, exactly.
I was gonna say, there's only about 2.6% of this show that really needs to be broadcast.
Hey, NSA, FBI, if you could whittle that down for us and make a really great show, kind of condensed,
save door
through,
much
that'd
time.
Be really great, just for the record.
Thanks.
<That's right. laughs>
I'm sure those engineers are good at editing. So
awesome.
I kind of completely went off squirrel.
Oh, that's funny.
There for a second. I don't have any idea what I was talking about.
Squirrel.
No, that's all right. There were a couple things about the webcams I did want to throw out there. The way you're going about it's piecemeal, which I don't disagree. I like what you're doing because, you know, you have a couple small solutions you're fixing. You're taking care of a couple small products. In my experience, you know, all these things I've set up is where a customer's called me and they have bought a box that has everything in it. And, you know, when you're going that route, those things can be had really, really inexpensively. I mean, I'm amazed what, you know, people order off Amazon for a couple $100. You know, it's got the full, you know, there's a head unit that has, you know, running some very lightweight version of Linux your recording storage. There'll be four wired cameras in the cheaper ones, but there's a mouse, the keyboard. It was fantastic, really, for the money. But I know that in setting those up, the hardest part was just getting all of the ports forwarded properly that machine. And of course, it's different though with what you're doing. But those machines usually you have, you know, three ports you have to open up, and so there's one for if setting up. Well, let me get this right now. I think there's one you had to set up for. If you were logging in, and this is only if you want remote access to
right.
it. You don't even have to do it at all if you don't want the remote access. But, you know, if you wanted to remote in that machine and view the cameras, you know, away from the home, you had to open up one for, you know, web browser to access. And I believe you had to open up a different one if you wanted to use a mobile app on a phone or tablet. And I'm trying to think what the other, I don't remember what the third one was. But yeah, I mean, just getting the ports forwarded properly. And then, of course, if you don't have a static IP, you just get them set up with, Dyn DNS and make sure it's always pointing at, make sure that's configured in the application. And those little DVRs, I've kind of had mixed experience. Some of them, the settings are very straightforward and it was easy, no big deal. Some of them, the software was the GUI was pretty crude, and you could tell that it was almost like the settings were just translated using like Google Translate, and those were the different, the things you were supposed to figure out what it was asking you. Generally speaking, that once you get those settings, just those few things, it can be some. Other than that, pretty straightforward. And so there's a lot of third party software out there for those units in particular. Once you connect in a web browser, it'll download a small. I'm telling you what it exactly it is, but it's, you don't have to install actual software. It just works inside the Internet Explorer was required.
Is it using Java?
It was ActiveX. Okay. Yeah. So what little bit I know about that end of that. Yeah. So actually, I think that was the hardest thing of getting this crap to work, was trying to figure out which settings in Internet Explorer would actually allow it to work. So fortunately, most people don't even want that. They just install, they just want to see it on their iPhone. Okay, beautiful. We can do that easy. And so that being the most difficult part, but yeah, I just want to mention there's tons of third-party software out there. I know that usually in setting it up, it's going to want those, the settings or whatever that you have as far as the you're directed to, there's a username and password that's always set up to get access. It's going to need the port. But, I know the ones that I've used, it has a list of 50 manufacturers, and you choose whatever the manufacturer of the camera is. But it was amazing how many, it seemed like there was a million different combinations that this software would work with. And even just, seems like it even had the option just to automatically try and configure itself. And so sometimes that would work. And I was like, man, magic. It's like, oh, I'm done. Other times you would have to kind of punch in like the manufacturer of the cameras and whatnot. But so there is a lot of third-party stuff out there. That sounds like a nice project. I hope you can come back sooner.
Yeah, I'll be back as soon as the FBI gets done interrogating me. But I have one of those DVR.
He doesn't know anything. Trust us.
I know. Don't forget to take your shoes off.
I was surprised. I have one of those DVRs, Tim, that you're talking about. I just got it like 3 weeks ago, and okay. I was shocked with how simple setting it up was. Well, like you said, just if you just want to record. Literally, you plug it into the wall. You plug to the power cord RCA jacks for each camera, and you turn it on, and it's it. You're done. Right. I mean, literally.
Yeah. literally yeah. Less complicated.
And so mine's recording. I only have one camera out, but right now, but it's set up for 8. It'll support 8 cameras and. The kit came with 4. The reason I didn't go with one of these, because I think mine was like $279 at Walmart. The reason I didn't was because, one, I really wanted wireless because it's in an old building that's right. it's split. So it's basically 2 buildings, and I didn't want to deal with running cables if I didn't have to. And the other reason is the quality of the pictures on these, at least on mine, aren't nearly as good as what like David's was. Now I realize the one I bought's not HD, but even on it's just still kind of grainy. So I don't need the DVR functionality. So I figured rather, so it's kind of a trade-off, right? So I'm going to spend a little bit more money just on cameras to get a little bit better quality because I don't need that DVR functionality. And this gives me, I think, a little bit more flexibility for, you know, movement or, you know, in the future. So I don't know. I love learning new things, and this is something new, so I'm excited.
Well, no, and I think you're right because you actually had just a couple of very specific problems that you wanted to address and fix. You know, you didn't need to take a sledgehammer to kill this fly. You know, I agree with the way you're doing it. As far as, you know, DVR functionality or whatnot, so again, you can install a third-party app on the desktop and let it record from there. Or, I mean, crying out loud, these stupid webcams usually come with enough software to do stuff like that as far as at least, you know, grabbing still pics, you know, when it senses motion. That right there is more than what gas stations have 5 years.
Yeah, I was talking.
So, you know, and the same thing too is that same software could be installed on a remote machine. So, which I kind of like. I like the idea of recording on a remote machine. Maybe in addition to that, I don't know. If I walk in and see a webcam, the first thing I'm going to do is smash the thing I connected to.
Right.
I mean, if I was like, you know, burglar, you know, I mean, if I was there to.
Yeah. Well, ideally, if you're doing it for security, you know, you're going to have your cameras. And eventually, when, my system set up here, the idea would be that there would be no way to get in to disable a camera without being recorded on another camera, disabling that camera. You know what I mean? So that's kind of my end goal. But the problem is they're all wired. And I'm a little bit of a large fella. So the idea of climbing in the attic and falling through the ceiling is really not a really fun sounding idea to me to run cables. So
You'd fall through the ceiling and lay on the bed and break that iPad again.
Don't you start with me. Just because of that. Just because of that, you get to fix this, Tim. That's your next project right there, baby. You can't see it, but that screen's shattered.
Oh, you have to act. Oh, I was just saying that it didn't look like that was activated. You gotta activate. That's good.
I agree. If you have the least bit of trepidation about going into the attic, I think it's good advice.
You know, honestly, I think what I'm going to do is with IP cameras, I might completely change my setup and just not use what I have and go with these wireless IP cams. If they end up working, then that just saves me a whole lot of trouble running wires. And the thing is where, at least for my house, they would all be within, you know, 50 feet. I'm assuming that these things will work that far. We'll have to wait and see. But
well, they just need to connect back to your wireless. So if you can get signal 50 feet away from your house and still connect to your wireless device, you know, your router, then these will work.
Right.
They're just another device on the wireless.
As you guys know, I'm very slow, so you have to like draw it out with a easel and, you know, crayons so I can understand. So, yeah. Well, it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny, you know. I'm kind of the village idiot in our little TeamSpeak channel, and I was trying to set this DVR or this surveillance DVR system up, and it literally came with, you know, one of those big sheets of like a poster size directions, you know, and it's got like the huge pictures, plug this here, plug this there. I still screwed it up. Brian had to remote in and help me.
They just don't make them like the WoW machines, huh?
Oh, you know, if everything was like the WoW machine, what you need is webcams.
Yeah.
For
Yeah, that's what I need.
for dummies.
I think Mitch has called me a dummy.
That's just WoW cam.
Yeah. No. I think they have a book out there.
No.
Anywho, so yeah, that's my latest project, and I'm excited to learn about it. And I'll let you guys know how it works out.
You got my interest tweaked
now. I'm telling you, you look at that HD1 David hat.
I mean,
I was blown away. Blown away with how perfect the image was. I mean, it was crazy. He's kind of funny. He said that, you know, he's got like six of these around the house, and as soon as his wife comes home, she like takes them and turns them all against the wall. You're not spying on me. I know what you're up to. That's right.
You're not the government.
Yeah, you know what? That's something that, you know, it's like anytime you do something the first time, it's like, okay, well, it takes a bit to figure it out. But after you do it the first time, it's like, this webcam, it's like, hey, this is a pretty good gig. And so, whenever it comes up in conversation, or if I feel like maybe somebody could benefit from it, that's one of those things. I throw it out there. Hey, I've done this too. These are great, because I know that I'm in tech for a living, and it really impressed upon me how inexpensive these have become, how really great they are and work, and that they're inexpensive. And so it's another one. Anytime I discover something that is relatively easy to do, it's something that, you know, that I would enjoy doing, there's money to be made there, I figure the bases are covered. Now my wheels just have to spin a little bit and figure out how to get some more of it to do. And so it's not a tough sale. You do a couple, it pretty much sells itself. I should start selling more, because it really is. They're pretty outstanding.
The kind of that Davis has, Fred, what did he pay for his cameras?
They were $150-ish a piece. Yeah,
a piece.
Yeah, the kit I got was three for like $190. I was on, and it was really cheap. It was like $50 cheaper than anywhere else. He was even surprised. He even said, "Oh, that's a heck of a deal. Get it." So yeah, that was on Amazon. So they'll be here tomorrow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice. I came across a website earlier, and it happened to be just today for some. I don't know how I came across it, but have you guys ever heard of the website justdelete.me? It basically, if you've gotten a hold of, or somebody's gotten a hold of your email address that you just get spams from stuff, if you want to block it, that's one way to do it. But you can go to here to justdelete.me, and it says it's a directory of direct links to delete your account from web services, and they're all listed from red, yellow, or green for a simple process, some steps, or cannot fully be deleted without contacting customer services. And they have things like Spotify, Amazon, IMDb, Instamapper, Khan Academy. So you can go through here, and it tells you, you know, it takes you right to the page where you can go and just delete your fantastic email accounts. So I came across this. I thought it was a great one to just, you know, kind of have in the back of your, kind of in your pocket of tools.
Walnuts on there.
I like the ones that are black and say difficulty.
Twitter. Impossible. No, that's not. It's pot nuts on it.
Yeah. Impossible.
Like Pinterest, /. Netflix.
Facebook.
Hacker News. GoDaddy. Oh, GoDaddy.
It's cool.
Yeah. So that's a great one. I thought I'd throw that one out there.
Cool. I like that. You know, that's one thing that makes me crazy is that they'll beat down your door trying to get you in, but heaven forbid you actually want to leave. You can't find the door. Yeah. You'll click right through. You will click and click and click. And exactly. And to have a resource that just takes you right there, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So it's kind of like constantly hitting zero on the phone when you're trying to reach an operator. Eventually the phone will freak out, and eventually you'll end up getting hold of somebody.
Good line.
So I thought I'd throw that out there. Yeah. So anybody else got any other stuff that for our inaugural Podnuts show?
I thought it was good.
I thought it was good, except for the fact that I was on it.
Great time.
Oh, it's okay.
No, you brought up.
I'm going to come back.
I want to get an IP cam now.
Yeah. I'm going to order some today. Yourself? Then I'm going to put one here. Then I can just watch myself talk to you guys. Yeah, talk to you guys.
You mean internet protocol cam?
Yeah.
Actually, I would like to get ones out of the house know, a couple out of the house, too.
Yeah, most of them are indoor, outdoor, so.
Outdoor, yeah.
Took me a minute there, Tim. I got it now.
Tim's having a little party with himself here tonight.
I just wasn't.
The laugh, the laugh is part of the show.
I thought that's what
it is. Yes, the internet protocol cameras.
I just got a little confused.
It's okay. Thanks. Thanks for. If anybody who doesn't get that now, please rewind the audio to about 30 seconds ago and just keep an open mind.
I wouldn't do that.
No, actually, don't even do that. Join Geeksters TV on
Geeksters
Friday nights
at Podnuts,
and then just come in.
Oh yeah, good point. Sorry.
Well, no, for Unbootables. Yes, but so guys,
yes,
great show.
Yes,
tonight.
It's kind of like the so much. It's kind of like the Windows Start button, like to shut down Windows. You have to press Start. If you want that other show, you actually have to go to Geeksters, right? Geeksters. But if you want the Geeksters, you don't go to Geeksters anymore.
No. Yeah, if you want to watch Unbootables, you have to go to
Geeksters.
If you
want to watch Podnuts.
If you want to watch Geeksters, you go to podnuts.com.
Okay, just check.
Again, podnuts.com. Whoa, that's heavy.
okay, all right. I think I got it.
Well, great.
You guys will help me make it back.
We'll help you through, okay. Tim. We'll help
Let me
you
set
through.
Up that IP cam.
There you go. There you go. Internet protocol, right?
No.
Okay. Great. All right. Well, guys, I've had a great time. If you want to reach us, get a hold of us at podnuts.com. If you want to send us email, geeksters@podnuts.com. That's podnuts.com. And if you want to send us a voicemail, 7076-PODNUT is where you can reach us. We do have Unbootables. Shows up on Geeksters.tv Fridays, somewhere right around 11 p.m. Eastern. Roughly. Is that when that one starts, Mitch?
It's Saturday. On Saturday. Roughly,
give or take an hour. Yeah. Oh, Saturdays. That's right. It has moved to Saturdays. If you show up on Friday, you'll be there all by yourself. Saturdays. Yeah. Are we still doing the Mumble server?
No, I haven't
Mumble
been there.
Server.
Still, I tried.
Fred was, I
tried.
I mean,
Mitch
my
had
Fred
bad,
had it set up.
Bad mojo, and he portrayed his hatred for it onto everybody else. So nobody came in.
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. Just no one ever went there.
All right. Well, we'll figure something out. And again, join us in the Podnuts lounge, podnuts.com/lounge. Or if you just have an IRC chat program, whether it's XChat or Pigeon, whatever like that, it's the free node network. And that's the room hashtag Podnuts. Keep the emails coming. Keep the voicemails coming. We do have an email. Didn't get to it today, but we will next week. We have a listener who wants to know more about login scripts, something that I had briefly mentioned a couple weeks ago. So we'll, you know, it's great for, you won't use too many login scripts when you're necessarily in your home, but for a business that needs to have, you know, map drives and stuff like that, we'll talk about login scripts next week. But thanks again for everybody coming out. Mitch, Tim, Fred, it was great to have you here. I'm excited to be on Podnuts, and we will catch everybody else next week. See you later, guys.